The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, 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 what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 580. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Chris Seeley, Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Mangioma.
What up, what up?
All right, guys, we have returned with another one. Some fun stuff. Manny and I are actually in a physical room together at the same time. It's crazy, you know?
I said, yep.
you're going to hear some of that tonight, some, you know, back and forth. But anyway, we're back. And this week was interesting with gaming. We're going to do something different tonight. We're going to start off with a review of Pragmata. Richard and I have played it, and we want to share our thoughts. So, as always, Rich, I'm going to let you take over, and then I'll just jump in. So, what do you think of Pragmata?
All righty, then. Yes, Pragmata. I thought it was a phenomenal game. Like I have mentioned in my review, pretty much, if you played the demo, that gives you a pretty good idea of what to expect as far as the gameplay. But I do want to make this comment because, obviously, you know, as Tony mentioned, we both reviewed the game. They were very clear in the objectives that there were some things that you could not talk about past a certain part in the game. And obviously, Capcom did that because they didn't want any story spoilers out there. They had the exact same agenda with Resident Evil Requiem because we could not talk about anything that happened in Raccoon City. We couldn't say anything about that in our review, so I got a lot of respect for that as far as the storytelling is concerned. But no, the game is phenomenal, man. The hacking, nonstop hacking. I like how you, obviously, as you get deeper into the game, you face some different types of enemies. It does get a lot tougher as you start to progress through the game. But overall, I mean, yes, it was a fun experience. And I will make mention of this, you know, for me, obviously, I like the gameplay. I also like the characters, and particularly Diana, because they make you care about those characters based on their relationship. Like I said in my review, this is just my opinion, that relationship reminds me of Joel and Ellie in The Last of Us. Obviously, it's a lot different, but it has the same type of vibes. And I will also give a shout out to someone that left a comment on my review, said, this looks like Dad Space. Which I can understand that. That's a very good way to describe it. Yes. But no, I had a great time with the game. And I will make this as my final comment. Then I'll pass the mic over to you, Tony. We were talking last week. There was a question asked about our favorite new IPs. And I made the comment and said that I wasn't sure if I could say anything, but I could tell you now. This obviously, for me personally, is one of my favorite new IPs because I applaud the fact that Capcom went in a different direction to try something different as opposed to releasing another game in a franchise we've already seen. So I got to give them props on that. But no, fantastic game. I had a great time.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. As to quote you, I agree with everything that has been said. a couple of things I want to add to it. As I did play this game, like, at an event, like, last year, I think it was in August, and even though at the time I appreciated what they were doing, I still wasn't 100% sure sold on the combat, because you always have to go through this puzzle, like a hacking mini game, to destroy the enemy shields so your weapons are actually effective. You can shoot enemies wherever you want, obviously, but you know, unless you bring their shields on, you're going to be doing mosquito damage. So, but once that clicks, it clicks, you know, and I like how you get different, they're called nodes, like different nodes, like you pass through one node, your weapons are like stronger. You pass through another node, like their shields get weaker, quicker, and electricity, all this other stuff. And it's cool. It's like you kind of have to like really think through stuff. It's like, okay, I can either go through the easy route and get to the end of the node quick, disable shield, or I can go through all these other nodes and disable shields 3 times in a row and really kill them fast. So I like how like cerebral the combat is. It's not super hyper fast, but at the same time, shit gets real. You know, like there were some encounters where I was like sweating. So that was really good. I like the world, the exploration, the moon. I wish there were more of those like spots where you're outside the base and the gravity's all like weird, you know, because of moon gravity. I thought I would have enjoyed that more because those sections were cool. I like the boss fights, giant robots you got to kill. And even though you're on the moon, there's a lot of different environments because there's some places they're trying to replicate Earth. You guys have seen the trailer with New York. I like how the director said they purposely tried to make New York look like it was created by AI slop. But obviously it was handcrafted, but they wanted to get that recreation. So that was cool. And like you said, you know, the star of the show was Diana, you know. Very interesting you said Joel and Ellie. I wouldn't go that far because they had a more like they argued more, you know, Joel and Ellie, whereas Diana and Hugh kind of get along for the most part. You know, they, you know, it's like more of a real father's daughter thing. And it's cool. The characters really carried this game through for me. And, you know, obviously I'm not going to say anything about the ending. The ending was dope. Crazy boss battles. Game's great. In my opinion, it is a game that a lot of people could enjoy, you know, if you get past. But I wouldn't even say the combat is that bad. It's once it clicks, it just clicks and it's simple, you know. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it is one of the better IPs of this generation, you know. So shout out to Capcom, you know.
That price point ain't that bad, is it? $60?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Even when I was doing my review, I'm like, wait, this shit's 60? Like, we haven't had that price in a while. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
In this economy?
Yeah. Does anybody here have any questions you want to ask us about the Pragmatas?
Yes. I'll go ahead, Manny.
Oh, no. I was just going to ask if that stuff from the demo came over. Like, because you earn, like, some extra stuff in the demo, like an alternate suit, which has, like, scribble, like, drawings all over it. And then you have, like, this other, like, you get, like, all this artwork that she makes in there. I'm wondering if that, because that demo for some reason saves. Like, why would you have a save in a demo that doesn't do anything? So I was just curious about that.
Yeah, Rich, maybe you can answer that because I didn't play the demo, so I have no idea. You know, I don't know.
Well, to quote myself, that is a phenomenal question, Manny. I unfortunately also did not get a chance to play the demo on PlayStation 5, so I'm not sure if it carried over. And I know, and I believe when we got access to the game, there was a couple of extra things we did get with that code. I think it would carry over if they had a save file, but I'm not 100% sure. But that's a good question. We need to get an answer on that one.
I guess I'll find out when I get it later.
Oh,
yeah. So yeah.
So I have a question.
Go ahead, bro.
So a couple of things. How approximately long did it take you to complete this game?
For me, it was like the counter set 10 hours, 30 minutes. But I admittedly kind of just ran through it, you know, because there is side stuff you could do. And there's a shit ton of stuff that unlocks after the game. You unlock an entire new area, you know, of the moon, which is crazy. Oh. It's more of a challenge area. But yeah, every level has challenge areas and there's other things you could do. But I kind of skipped all that because I just wanted to get the review done. But yeah, it's basically Resident Evil Requiem length, you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rich.
Just to piggyback off of what Tony said. Yeah, for me, it was about 12 hours because I did dabble in some of those training simulations, which I thought were also fun. And like Tony said, yeah, the unknown signal mode that is available afterwards. It's a great game that you can, if I can make this comment, this is a great game you can play over the weekend, I would say. So it coming out on a Friday is great. So somebody can jump into it on Friday. They'll be done with it by Sunday if they wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, I could say this now since the game is out. That's literally what happened with our friend Danny Pena. He got the review code on Friday. By Sunday, he was done with it. Yeah, go ahead, Carlos.
So how you mentioned there's a, you know, it's a lot of hacking and stuff like that to lower the defenses of the enemies. Does that slow down at all the combat? Like, does it make it seem like the combat is slower? Like, obviously it probably does, but does it wear on it at all?
It can, especially when there's like five enemies at you and you got to do all the hacking at all of them. But there is a thing called a multi-hack. It's another node you could add to it. So you could like hack multiples of them at the same time. So imagine a grid, right? With squares in them, and you got to go down a certain line to get to the green node to deactivate the shields. There are sometimes barriers in the way, or even like things that'll hurt you. So you got to avoid them, but then you also get some nodes that could make all that shit go away and shrink the matrix down to like maybe four squares or two, you know, to make it really easy. So it can get a little crazy, but yeah, combat in general is not super fast. I think because of that, they're trying to compensate because of the fact you got to do all this puzzles and shit.
So I just want to make sure I heard this correctly. The game is 10 hours long, and that is too much to go through its mechanics without a shortcut.
I don't understand the question.
I'm not entirely sure I understand. And that's why I'm asking, like, this isn't a gotcha. I'm like, okay, so the game is 10 hours long and its base mechanic is this slashing kind of fighting thing. And then there's ways that you're talking about kind of automating it or getting, you know, away from this.
Kind of, but the thing is, like, for example, those things that could shrink the grid, you only get like one or two of those, like, because you got to be judicious with them, you know? Most of the time, you got to deal with the whole thing.
No, I know. I guess for me, like, it seems like this is where I get very interested in certain types of games, because this, for lack of a better term, this seems like the antithesis of a Nintendo game. Like, okay, so I get that it may be satisfying, but it doesn't feel like the actual mechanics of the thing you're doing are fun if you want to skip over it. That's just a weird thing I find in some video games, a lot of modern video games, where, like, it's this pain in the ass thing I got to go through, but there's ways to get through it. I'm like, this, the pain in the ass in a game like this, the whole thing is supposed to be fun. It's just,
well, no, so I mean, it's like, I think the thing about it is, like, it's two aspects of it, right? It's a third person shooter in general, but it has this extra sort of puzzle aspect to it. If you want to make your fights go a little bit quicker, because all of the robots that you shoot at will have like armor on them, so you can keep shooting at them until they die. But if you want to defeat them faster, you do this hacking mini game that's super quick. So what Tony was talking about, there's some points where usually it's like, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, like 12, a 12 thing grid usually that you're trying to essentially move this thing to, like, you know, like a little thing to. Sometimes it's like a little bit of a maze. There's like obstacles in the way inside of it. But you have to sort of do it fast enough in order to be able to do it. And that's why he was talking about, like, when there's multiple enemies, you have to sort of, you know, like, try to do the thing while you're also essentially moving around and trying to dodge the actual attacks of the game.
Okay. I think I like those. That kind of reminds me of, you know, they'll put dodge mechanics and things like that in turn-based games. So,
there's a demo of it right now that's on Xbox and PlayStation and PC. So you can, you know, see if it gives you a pretty good idea what the gameplay is, and then, you know, you can see if you dig it or not. Demo.
That's fucking crazy. Yeah, like I walked in here blind. I got off work late, and that was a genuine question, not a gotcha.
Yeah, no, I get it. But I never, you know, just to be clear, I never said the mechanic was a pain in the ass. It actually legit makes every combat encounter tactical. It's not just run in there and shoot everything. You're like, you have to think. You can't just go in there willy-nilly.
I meant that I didn't understand what the point of the mechanic, that the whole like like having a mechanic that seems like a thing that you want to skip seemed weird to me, but the way Manny explained it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no, he explained it right, but I'm assuming you didn't do you haven't seen a lot of Pragmata, but yeah, that's the whole premise. It's like basically every robot has shields around them, so you have to do a hacking mini game to lower the shield so your weapons are actually effective. Otherwise, you're literally doing mosquito damage on them, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, honestly, I know I could look this up, but it's one of those opportunities for me to just kind of have a blind reaction with you guys. And,
yeah.
I mean, I could just sit in the back of the room and quietly look up Pragmata.
This is what Throwdown's about, right? Get into your guys' questions. This is, you know, so that's good that you know that. But yeah, it's an interesting mechanic for sure. It takes some, I would say probably a good half an hour to get used to, because you're not just, I like, you know, in my review, there's always a section of what is this game like? I'm like, I don't know. You know, like, because it has such, the game has like just a little bit of Dead Space in there, a little bit of Resident Evil, a little bit of Nier Automata, and then some puzzle stuff. It's a very interesting game that I've never really played before. And I'm like, and that's why I said that in my review. I'm like, hey, this game actually shows that there's innovation in the AAA space. Holy shit. You know?
That's insane.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, wait, what? Capcom is fucking cooking right now. This and Requiem, they're the shit. All right, anything else you guys want to say about Pragmata? Because there is another game I want to talk about. And Rich, I believe you did play this one because you've been talking about it forever. The Mouse PI game, did you play that?
Yes, sir. I have been playing Mouse PI. I'm actually still working on a review for that because the embargo for that ended literally a day after Pragmata. So I haven't... Yeah, it's been a very crazy week. And then another game called Replaced, that embargo also ended the same day, about an hour or two afterwards. So, yeah, I have a couple of things I have to catch up on. But, yes.
What is it? Gamageddon?
Yes. Hey, this is April. There's a lot of games coming out this month. So, this is the mini Gamageddon that we knew was coming. But, yeah, so Mouse PI, first-person shooter. It has the 1930s cartoon style that you've seen in the Mickey Mouse cartoons, so on and so forth. I will say this, like I made the comment before, this obviously it's very very heavily inspired by like a Doom or a Wolfenstein, but it is the cartoon style. But one thing I do want to say about this game, you know, obviously you do play the detective's name is Jack Pepper, which is basically a play on words, Pepper Jack Cheese, if you get that. Yeah, they have a whole bunch of jokes, a whole bunch of gaming references in there. So I could tell they had a lot of fun with how they put this game together. And like I said, if you've ever watched cartoons, I want to say like Batman, the animated series, Looney Tunes, any of this type of stuff, this is pretty much what they are channeling in this. Well, I think the best example, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? That's what they are channeling, because clearly some of this stuff in there is adult-oriented, but they're not outright saying that. You just know some stuff in here is for a little bit more mature audiences, but it's done in a very playful manner. But no, it's just a solid first-person shooter. Like I said, I'm still reviewing the game, but I'm having a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, a lot of people have been talking about that, so definitely looking forward to your full thoughts when you beat it. You know,
definitely.
Have you played Replaced by any chance?
I have also been playing Replaced. That's another game that I think is really awesome so far. I think I mentioned previously, the whole premise is that this, and it's funny, the timing of this game. You know, we always talk about AI and all of the stuff happening now with AI and jobs. The game is basically, there is a AI that takes on a human body and is functioning as the human body trying to escape and has some enemies coming after him. Now, the combat in there is from basically the Batman Arkham type of games. It has that type of combat in the game. But this is all the 2D, the clever art style and stuff like that. And the way they play around with... Because, again, this there's also a demo for this game out right now. But also, fun fact, and this is a shout-out to Carlos... Because I think he made the comment and said, I'm not going to subscribe to Game Pass anymore. This is on Game Pass, ladies and gentlemen. So you can play this right now if you have Game Pass. You can also play Hades 2, which is on Game Pass right now, too. But yeah, it's a fun game so far. I definitely will have more to say about it soon. But yeah, been trying to juggle between playing these two games, finishing Pragmata. It's been a pretty busy week. But no, definitely, definitely a fun game so far.
Yeah, look at that. Mini game again. Ain't that something? All right. Let's move on here. So we're going to talk about Xbox for a little bit. As you can see from the headline of our episode here. Okay, so last week, rumors started circulating that the new head of Xbox, Asha Sharma, was not happy with Xbox Game Pass pricing, and that they're looking into trying to change that. Some of the potential things that may happen is dropping Call of Duty, from Game Pass to lower the price. Well, turns out we can't confirm the Call of Duty part. We can't confirm that Asha Sharma is indeed not happy with the price, because an internal memo that she sent to employees got, I don't know if it was leaked, but it got, it's out there. The Verge has seen it. So this is what she had to say. This is a memo to the employees at Xbox. Game Pass is central to gaming value on Xbox. It's also clear that the current model isn't the final one. Short term, Game Pass has become too expensive for players, so we need a better value equation. Long term, we will need to evolve Game Pass into a more flexible system, which will take time to test and learn around. So, yeah, there you go. I think, I don't know how they're going to make it happen, but it seems we may be getting a more affordable Game Pass because Asha Sharma's not happy. It's like, this shit's too expensive. And I think everybody on here would agree with her on this one. It is too expensive, and then kind of related to this, shout out to Jess Corden. He's been on fire this week with all these scoops. One potential thing, this is my personal speculation right now, one way to really make Xbox Game Pass valuable is that apparently, and this is not part of the memo, this is just what Jez is saying is happening, so we don't know if it's true or not, is that this is his quote, there are very, very big discussions regarding exclusivity at Xbox. You got exclusives in Game Pass? That'll make it valuable for sure. So very interesting stuff happening as soon as Phil Spencer and Sarah Bond leave the door. So what do you guys think?
I mean, I'm happy that she's acknowledging it because it is, a big factor. You need to make Game Pass a service where people need to be in it before you can start raising the prices like this. Like Netflix, people are already hooked on Netflix. They already have over, 200 million users, maybe even more at this point. And there's people that they can't live without their Stranger Things, their Squid Games, their Wednesdays, and all these type of shows and movies that come out that they always watching this thing. So when it goes up to price, like $20 a month or 25, I think it is right now for the higher tier one, they have to suck it up because they've made the service in a way where they feel like they can't leave. And with Xbox, they never got to that point, and they started raising the prices like this. So I feel like if you can get it to a point where it's a little bit cheaper, and you're talking about exclusivity, get people hooked on the Xbox ecosystem and their first party games because they can't play them anywhere else, and then you can do the rest. But you got to hook them first, and I feel like they haven't done a great job at getting a substantial amount of folks into the Game Pass.
Yeah, they certainly haven't gotten those 2 billion people, like Phil Spencer said. I believe it was like 35 yeah. million they got. But you're right. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like, because I'm like that with Spotify. They're gonna raise the price. I'm like, I'm stuck, bro. I gotta pay. Xbox never got to that point with people. So it'll be interesting. For sure. What about the rest of you guys? What do you say?
I think, to be honest, I think that would be a thing, essentially just making it to the point where you just, make it the best deal, continue to make it the best deal in gaming, right? Like, in other words, give people reasons to stick around there because otherwise I get it, Phil was very much into sort of, wanting to put things on other consoles. And to be honest, I understand why he did that because the Xbox just wasn't getting those numbers. But, we do, have another Xbox coming along, right? how do we get people to jump along on this ride? So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Again, I feel like I know people are like, it's the exclusive idea is a very divisive term, but otherwise, if it is the same as everything that else is on the market, then what do you have other than what do you have that the other guys don't? You know, what is to stop you from just buying it on PC, as Tony has said many times, where it's like, I don't need an Xbox. I already have a PC that does all of this stuff, you know? So,
yeah. All right.
He's able to revitalize Xbox, bring back exclusives, and somehow revitalize them. I know we live in it. I think I'm just going to stop.
Chris, will you take back all those nasty things you said about her?
Yeah, it will be like, give me the crow pie, just like I ate with the Switch. Give it to me. If she does, it's too early to say that. I will eat crow.
For sure. But yeah, again, we'll see what happens. You know, maybe this Summer Game Fest will get an announcement. Because here's the thing. Like, she can't help games it being in development. Games take a long time. This kind of stuff could be enacted fast, you know? Like, right. drop Call of Duty from that shit and make it $20, you know? Or go back to 15. It really will get people back. Remember when Game Pass used to be $15, bro? You know, the ultimate one? But
that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was 8 years old or whatever, you know? Oh, man. It's crazy. But yeah, we'll see if Miss Asha Sharma can turn things around. And if she does, we're going to have to look back at Phil Spencer like, bro, the fuck were you doing, man? That's
Phil,
bad.
What was you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, right. What was you doing? Damn. and then another interesting thing also from Jess Corden. He's been on fire this week, bro. He's like, yo, I'm dropping these bombs, man. Another rumor is that Xbox Cloud Gaming is going to be rebranded as Xbox Play Now, which is interesting. I don't know how I feel about that, but I guess it's simple because it's like cloud gaming. Okay, but I don't know. Xbox Play Now. What do you think about that?
Bro, I think Microsoft's in trouble.
Well, I mean, duh.
Oh!
Yeah, go ahead, bro. Expand on that.
The Xbox. I mean, Microsoft in general.
Well, I agree.
I don't think this is huge news, but I don't think everybody also knows about it. There are some big computer manufacturers who are no longer shipping Windows with the basic computer setup.
Uh-oh.
They either offer a Linux operating system or a Windows operating system for like $100 upgrade. Like, Windows is all of a sudden not default, the default operating system on non-Apple products. And Windows 11 has garnered such a garbage reputation that Microsoft is boned in more ways than they got bigger problems than Xbox right now. And I think the whole fucking company is not doing great.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll get back to Microsoft, what we need to, but I agree with you. I think France or some country was like, yeah, fuck it, we're not using Windows anymore. Everybody's Linux now. It's like, what? But, you know, that's a side tangent. But I agree with you. Microsoft is kind of cooked right now. The whole push into AI has really bitten them in the ass. But maybe the shining light could be Xbox. Could you imagine that? That'll be the sole thing.
Sharma to the rescue? There.
Yeah, you heard about Surface laptops, right? $300 more, bro. For what? It's crazy,
bro. So here's a fun thing. I just got a Chromebook for free, I guess.
A Chromebook. Oh, interesting.
Apparently my insurance. I didn't realize I had been doing this thing where I had been accruing rewards points for like 3 or 4 years now, and I went in and I logged in. I was like, oh shit, I got like $400 worth of shit. And so one of the options was there's a new Chromebook, the 514 Spin. And like, this shit is more than just a Chromebook. It's got 12 gigs of RAM and it flips over and has fully 4,000 pressure sensitivity drawing and whatnot. I'm like, okay, this actually seems like it might be kind of interesting. And so I was looking into it and, so yeah, it's, and even this thing like comes with Chrome OS and Linux, so like won't be able to run games off it per se, but it's just fascinating to watch Microsoft take such big L's. And yeah, if what you're talking about is true, I kind of find it hilarious because that's essentially what Sony did. Because remember, they used to make TVs and shit.
Yeah. Do they still make TVs? Bravia?
They do. Yeah, they do. But they, yeah, like, they still Sony used it, to yeah, fucking make like Walkmans and fucking stereo equipment shit.
They sold it to they did. That's right. That's to TCL. You know,
line.
Yeah. By the way, this is the most positive thing I've ever heard anyone say about Chromebooks. I've been working at Tomside. I'm very glad I've avoided reviewing Chromebooks. The Chromebooks are shit. You know, so I'm glad you like yours, Brett. You know.
Oh, I don't know. Here's the thing. I haven't gotten it yet, but it was that, or like most of the time these rewards programs are kind of garbage. And so, like, the best I could have gotten is, like, maybe I can get, like, a Walmart gift card that I can use for groceries if I get my ass out there. But I was like, you know what? Like, I have my gaming laptop, and that's great. But when I want to do work on, like, a laptop or write something or something like that, like, it's just kind of a pain in the dick to haul this thing around because it gets hot as shit. It's a gaming laptop. It gets hot like the core of the fucking sun. So you got to, like, have the fucking fan attached. It's just, I would rather leave this in one place and cast my gaming to other things. So I'm actually gonna kind of use this as an experiment.
Yeah, just remember it's online only because it's Chrome OS. Just keep that in mind.
Oh yeah, I mean I have Google Fiber here, so like
okay, just for me, you need to go out. You know,
I don't really think this is gonna be an I go out kind of thing. For me, this is gonna be a really interesting thing for two reasons. One, it supposedly should sync well with Google Wi-Fi 7, so okay, I can kind of use it as a Steam broadcaster. But also because of the ability to pop open Sandbox Linux, like it should, in theory, allow me to figure out and play around with some of this new agentic stuff that's going on. Not that I expect anything of it, but like, I don't know. I should probably keep appraised of what current technology is doing. I don't want to be that guy that doesn't know how to use Windows anymore. So it's actually kind of interesting. And even the idea of like an agent kind of thing of like, oh, so I could use that to help automate my workflow for tattooing and shit, so I don't have to deal with many emails and shit like that. So it'll be interesting for several reasons. But I'm not endorsing Chromebooks. Just saying that is not a thing I'm endorsing. I just have an opportunity to try it, and I'll let you guys know what I find out. But
yeah, I mean, you're getting a 2-in-1, bro. That's pretty good, man. Even if it's a Chromebook, that's pretty cool. You know. Convertibles are fun, man. Yeah.
That's why I went with it, because I was like, you know, it's a safety net in case my iPad shits the bed.
Mm-hmm. I think it's smart. You know, and to be honest, Microsoft is fucking up so bad. You know, I can't even begrudge someone going with a Chromebook. You know?
Well, that was where I kind of jumped on this. I was like, I don't know if I want to.
Bro, I'm on Mac OS right now streaming this fucking podcast. That's how tired I am of fucking Windows 11, you know?
Yeah. I think everybody I'm like, I love Windows, but I'm sick of this Windows bullshit. What are my other options?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not a Windows hater. I love Windows, but this current Windows sucks. Give me Windows 11 the way it was when it launched. That was good. Then you fucked it up with all those co-pilot bullshit. Anyway, this is not the tech down. Let's get back to the gaming. And let's talk about Starfield on PS5. And it's a hot fucking mess. Oh, man. So I'm going to read this here from Twitter. Starfield's PS5 launch is facing major backlash as players want refunds and report widespread crashes, freezes, and save issues that are making the game nearly unplayable. Oh, so it's a typical Bethesda launch then. Across both PS5 and PS5 Pro, users say the game is crashing during basic actions like landing on planets, exploring, and even loading save files. This is Fallout 3 all over again, man. Some players have also reported save corruption and hard system freezes, leading many to demand refunds through the PlayStation Store. Reports on Reddit describe repeated crashes, with some players claiming dozens of lockups since launch. The issue appears to be affecting both standard PS5 and PS5 Pro systems, and Bethesda has yet to provide an official statement or confirmed fix, which has only added to player frustration. This tweet was from a couple of days ago, so I don't know if they released the official statement at this time. But hey, PS5 players, welcome to the world of Bethesda. You get a buggy ass game at launch. I'm not surprised by any of this shit, you know? Is anybody else here? Go ahead, bro.
We're getting to the point where it's not even cute for Bethesda to do all this stuff. Because remember, it's like, oh, like they made such great games where it we tolerated those bugs. Now it's not your old Bethesda anymore. You know, it's not looking good for them, and it's they gotta fix this.
Do you remember my woes with the Indiana Jones game? It's like it is theoretically a Bethesda game, and like also, by the way, Bethesda's customer service is atrocious. I've been going back and forth with these people for months. You know, just talking about it. They every so often they reply back is like, did the issue get solved? No. Has it changed? Did you update the fucking thing? No, you didn't. It's all just this placebo, like, you know, they're shipping it out to another country bullshit stuff. There's nobody there that knows anything. So yeah, people are just going to keep continuing screening. Hopefully, you know, they make enough of a stink and they just, you know, they have to cyberpunk the hell out of this shit, because there's a lot of things they need to fix on that game. And how is it that they're not able to they've shipped games on PlayStation before. So all of a sudden now, what did they do? Just handed it to somebody's cousin? Hey, port this thing. You know?
I should have gotten Blue Point to do it. Oh, wait.
Oh. But yeah, what do you guys think, man?
I just want to make a comment.
Yeah.
I think this is a very interesting timing, considering all the stuff that Pete Hines has said about that Microsoft acquisition of Bethesda. So this is not good. Starfield, yes, star flop confirmed on PlayStation 5.
Yeah, I mean, the game was fucking disaster on Xbox. Now it's a disaster on PlayStation. So welcome to the party. You know, it's funny to me, man. What a letdown for a lot of people, you know, because you're right, Carlos. It's like people dealt with those bugs in those older games because the games were fucking good, you know, but this game ain't good. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, it's not even that. The Bethesda games were epic. You got the Skyrims, you got your Oblivions, you got Fallout. You know, like these are games that transcended the video game industry. Starfield is just, you know, a run of the mill game. Like it's not bad. But it's not like a Skyrim. So you're not gonna have people tolerate that with this type of game, especially not on PlayStation. When it's an Xbox, originally an Xbox exclusive game, but they got even more ammo to shit on it.
Yeah. So there you go. So if you're on PlayStation, don't buy Starfield. Don't waste your money. You know, that's a PSA from your friends at Throwdown. All right, we'll move on here. Now, this one's interesting. So I believe it was earlier this week, this hacker group called Shiny Hunters, they got their hands on some GTA data, and they were ransoming it, you know, to Rockstar. Like, you know, they wanted like around $200,000. Like, you know, like, give us this money and we won't release this shit. Rockstar was like, fuck you, we're not paying you nothing, you know. So they released the shit. It was like 8 gigs worth of records. And the interesting thing is, so nothing came out about GTA 6. There was nothing in there about GTA 6. Most of it was actually about how much money Rockstar was making, right? You guys are going to find this shit hilarious, right? So when all this went out, how much money Rockstar is actually making off of GTA, their stock went up. Like, because there was shit in there, even the investors didn't know. Like, wait, we make that much money? Fuck, invest more, you know? So, so I'm going to break it down. So GTA Online makes $9.6 million a week. A week. You know?
Hell yeah.
Shark cards, Chris, they account for 75% of that.
I hate it here.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, let me read this real quick. Lifetime shark card revenue has exceeded $5 billion.
Pero why?
And my favorite part here, one notable how do I pronounce this word? Anonymity. I can't pronounce this fucking word.
Anonymity?
I'm going to try to phonics this shit. Anonymized. I don't know.
Anonymized, yeah.
I don't even know what the word means. Animized.
Anonymized.
Yeah. I think
I don't know what that means. Can you tell me?
I think it means like, you know, I'll go ahead, Brent.
I think it means to make random in this context.
Anonymized. Yeah.
It's like a randomizer, but for anonymity.
Yeah.
Yeah, to make anonymous. Kind of
the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never seen this word or even pronounced it, as you can see. You know, it's like what Mr. Serious? Burns was. Yeah, I'm not an accountant. I don't know why I don't know what this word is. It's
no,
like
no. But yeah, hey, yeah. I'm gonna take a moment to like point out here, because this is the thing I've run across in like everyday life and everything like that. I just want to point out the shit Tony is doing right now is the correct way to approach this shit like a man, instead of fucking walking away or sidestepping that shit. Be like, I don't know how to say or whatever. Like, walk in, ask the question, say that shit with your chest, learn something.
Damn right.
Respect.
I said, I'm phonicsing this shit, brother. We're getting through this word, you know?
We're hooking on this phonics.
Yeah, we're sticking on this shit. Anonymized. Anonymized.
Anonymized.
Is that how you say it? Yeah.
Yep.
Good stuff, man. Listen, I was raised on Hooked on Phonics. We sound the shit out. You know, not this bullshit kids are learning now. We're, what does the word feel like? You know, or whatever the fuck they're learning in school. Anyway, one random case of a single $1 million shark card purchase on Xbox One. Fucking whales, bro.
And on Xbox One?
On Xbox One on Christmas 2020. They must have got a fat check.
Did you say on Xbox One?
Yes.
This motherfucker spending $1 million on GTA and doesn't even have a Series X?
The Series X was out at that time. Yes. That's crazy.
This motherfucker's cheaping out on a console, dropping $1 million in GTA.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And here's the funny thing. So Red Dead doesn't make as much money, obviously, but it still makes $500,000 a week, which is insane.
I got multiplayer, I guess.
Multiplayer, yes, for multiplayer, yeah. So basically, GTA Online has 10 million active users, while Red Dead has 1 million. And 35% of GTA Online players are still on last gen systems, PS4 and Xbox One, like homie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wild, bro. Go ahead, Brett.
I think it's a turning point for me.
Really?
Yeah. You know, y'all not gonna like what I have to say.
But I'm all ears,
I'm
bro.
Curious. Yeah.
You're done with gaming?
I think at this point, I can officially point to Rockstar and say you are one of the worst things that has ever happened to gaming.
One second.
Despite
the good things that they did, they single-handedly normalized buying the same game five fucking times and then microtransactioning this shit into the ground. Like, they are the root of the cancer that has spread through the gaming industry. And at this point, I'm like, I think at this point we've reached a critical mass where you've done more harm than good. And I'm talking for the entire history of the company. Like, so all of the good that you have done for, you know, the first four GTAs, you have effectively undone. I hope your studio.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I'll correct you on, Brett, they haven't run their microtransactions to the ground. They're pretty solid. $1 million a day?
Yeah, $1 million. Yeah. Oh,
no, I guess what I meant is it's that shit's the definition of exploitative, in my opinion. There's no reason. Like, shark cards are the worst way to do what they're doing. This is coming from somebody who's, you know, seen microtransactions, they've seen gacha games, they've played World of Warcraft. It's GTA Online that is by far the most horribly exploitative cash drain that's aimed primarily at minors. For a company that made itself famous off beating hookers to death, I can't believe I'm about to say you should be ashamed of yourselves.
But yeah, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But I do want to start off real quick with somehow the hackers essentially were blackmailing Rockstar to pretty much be their PR, or, you know, to the stockholders, be like, yo, man, look how awesome this company is, at least in terms of, you know, generating revenue.
Yeah, this ended up helping Rockstar, except with Brett. He's done. But it helped them with the investors.
thing about it is, it's like, I'm sure that when those guys said, you know, Rockstar already knew what they had, and they're just like, yeah, fine, release it, whatever. It'll only make it's not damaging information. It's not like it's leaking any source code for Grand Theft Auto or anything.
Yeah, and that already happened previously. So, you know, they're already prepared for that. But yeah, $1 million or how many? $9 million a week? What was it?
$9.6 million a week.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's over a million a day. I
mean, yeah, that's why Rockstar didn't give a fuck. I go, go ahead. You know? Go ahead.
Oh, so you're making $500 million annually just off of.
Yes. And that one dude who paid $1 million.
Well, that guy. You can't afford a Series X, but you
don't. Them shark cards, though, I gotta get it, you know? Oh, man.
Is the butter machine?
Is the butter machine? That is funny, man. Let me read this real quick. By the way, shout out to Grok. I had to sum up all this shit. In short, and I like the way Grok breaks it down too. In short, it was a big pay or leak story that ended up revealing just how much money Rockstar is still printing from GTA Online. More of a business flex than a game ruining scandal. That's right. It's like how much money we make, bitches.
Yeah, oh, that's crazy. I mean, here's the thing. And we talked about this, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago. This game is still generating this much revenue after how many years? It's all the money.
It'll be 14 years.
Almost four. Yeah. Yeah. We're almost at year 14. And the new game is going to come out this year. And that's why they've taken this long, at least the last couple of years. They got to hit it with six, man. Because the way that GTA 5 hit and it still hits is ridiculous. So they got to find some way where six, hits almost as well as five. It doesn't have to do as well because, you know, five is an anomaly, I think. I don't think there's nothing that's going to surpass that.
No,
maybe ever.
Well, go ahead.
One other thing is the handy online five, just because you can see how heavily invested people are. Yeah. This guy dropping $1 million, he's buying everything. He's got multiple properties and all this. And cars, you cannot screw that up. They've invested so much. So you can't take it away and go, oh, you have to now, we're going to, you know, migrate your character. You got to migrate everything. You know, I don't know how that's going to look. They got to be very careful how they transition.
Yeah.
And but here's the thing, though, Chris.
By the way, now you see why they weren't in a rush to get GTA 6, because it would fuck up their money.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I kind of disagree with Chris for this particular reason. The shark cards are something that a lot of people are going to be upset if they don't transfer to GTA 6. But, I mean, here's the thing. GTA 5 Online is still going to be online. You know, people are still going to be playing it. So, you know, technically their shark cards are still there and functional, you know?
Oh, it's not going to transfer at all.
Not the shark cards, it's just the investment. Like, if you're like me, right? You know,
you spend $1 million.
I didn't spend $1 million.
No, not you, but I'm saying, like, what if you're that guy? You know,
you're that guy, right? So it's the stuff you invested in, right? I'm not talking about the shark cards. I'm talking about the 10 million or whatever he's fucking loaded up on. I'm talking about, like for me, grinding it out so I could buy a sub or buy a luxury condo, you know, to do the heist, or buying the doomsday bunker and all that stuff, or running the drug trade and the fucking drug trafficking business, the motorcycle club, all that shit. Like, so I've grinded it out. If you're gonna say like, hey, once we there's gonna be this transition of online and all that stuff is vanished, right? That would suck. That's what I mean. The guy who spent $1 million, he probably has another million. He just dump it there.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, because GTA 5 is still technically going to be online. And people could still, you know, do everything there with what they paid. And honestly, if I mentioned this maybe last year or something. If GTA 6 doesn't hit, wait for that GTA 5 option on the GTA 6. Be like, GTA 5 online is going to be available here too.
Oh, shit. That's
and like
true.
Fortnite.
Kuel says something interesting. He goes, if you can move your character over from 5 to 6, I think people would jump over immediately. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Like your character progresses and shit into this world.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's not gonna like. Here's the thing, and I've been saying this for years. The entire point of them making a new GTA is so that they can reset their economy and start to milk it all over again. They're going to reach a point of diminishing returns. The only way that they can be like, all right, reset, everybody spend $1 million again, is by making a new online. So I think that that would be, you know, shooting themselves in the foot to the point where, like, I don't even think that if they, from their point of view, at that point, why would they even make a new GTA? But the story, like, they haven't made a story for GTA in 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, when was the last, because I know those bank robbery things have stories, but yeah, I see your point. But yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle that transition. But I agree that we're going to have GTA 6 and 5 living concurrently. And they even said, no surprise here, GTA 6 will not have online at launch. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, did it say or hint at how long after launch? Because was it for GTA 5?
It was like, what, a month or two? It was a while.
A while. And then even then, there was stuff in there.
Yeah. They didn't hint at that, but yeah. And I don't, by the way, I should say that's what the reports are saying. Rockstar hasn't said that yet. But that's what, and I believe those reports. Again, they don't want to fuck up with GTA 5 money, you know? So, like, hey, here's your GTA 6. Enjoy the story. And then we could bring the online, you know?
So, Carlos, you know,
and that
would be the ideal is if they expand online and your character and vice versa.
Yeah.
If you could just transition either one and still keep or it carries over, just travel between, that would be the
I mean, you go ahead, Britt.
I was going to say, here's the thing. Chris, you're thinking in terms of what you'd want and what would make you happy. And I think that's where maybe I feel like you're getting off track. Because what's going to happen is GTA 6 is going to release, right? And they're like, guess what? Nobody has flying cars. Nobody has hoverbikes. Everybody starts back from square one with $0. You might say to yourself, fuck you. I'm just going to go play GTA 5. And then we're all going to go play GTA 6 and start to out-level you. What are you going to do?
I mean, there'll be some push to press. I'm going to play. Of course I'm going to.
Oh, I'm just saying that's Rockstar's thing. It's the FOMO. Like, they know that, like, yeah, like, you could still play GTA 5, but if they can get enough of your friends to start GTA 6. And that's the weird thing, like, because there's the me's of the world that are like, look, man, I don't have a hover tank fucking air commando fortress. I don't really want to spend the time or the money grinding for one. I'd actually be a little bit more interested to start fresh on the same, you know, even playing field as everybody else. But then that's going to create this massive FOMO drive, which is going to create massive engagement, and it's just going to be this self-sustaining loop. And so they know, like, yeah, you could have all your shit in GTA 5, or, you know, if you're letting your friends pass you up.
Yeah, I'm going to be sad if I don't say
that. Oh, man. All right, good stuff there. Moving on here. What do we have? Oh, this fucking story. So I'll do the setup, and then I'm going to let Manny take over. Because this shit pisses me off. So there's going to be an R-rated Bloodborne movie. Like, oh shit, let's go. And it's being developed by a guy that I just learned about this week called Jacksepticeye. Manny told me he's a very big YouTuber, 34 million people or whatever.
Wait, he's making him?
Some guy called Jacksepticeye. Yeah, I had to say, like, who?
Jacksepticeye is making a Bloodborne movie?
Yeah, so... I'll let you guys take this over because I don't know who the fuck this is, but I'm like so we're at a point where Manny, mute yourself. We're at a point where you're letting fucking influencers make movies. Okay.
Well, the crux of this, and this probably has to do with a lot of the things that have been getting pretty popular. Jacksepticeye is, you know, a very popular YouTuber and streamer and stuff, but the same time, he's also has that connection to Markiplier, who made what was it, Iron Lung, which was a a movie that was based off of a game that he did very well for them. And also, not to mention a lot of the Five Nights at Freddy's things, you know, that had a lot of influencers involved. What Hollywood is starting to see now is because they can't actually create their own, you know, like, box office draws. They are essentially mining the sort of influencer space. That's why you see the Backrooms movie that's coming out and a few other ones that have connections to these. So I would say this with the Jacksepticeye thing. you know, obviously it's, it could be, you know, he could have some sort of actual direct producer role on it, but I don't think so. I think the pure reason why they got him on this is because of his name. I think he has a position fairly similar to what Adi Shankar has, where he's more of like a hired hype man than an actual producer, because I don't see any, in any of the things that he has created, I don't see him being, it's an animated movie. He's never developed an animated film before. He's done none of this sort of stuff. And not to mention, they made this announcement at CinemaCon over the weekend, right? Over this, you know, over this week. If this guy was that important to the process, why would he still be at home? If you look at the announcement, he's like, "Oh, well, I'm so proud to be able to say that I'm part of this, the, producing this, the, this Bloodborne thing. And look on the wall, I have this Bloodborne hat. And look at my tattoos on my arm. I have blood. I'm so excited." I think if anything, he's probably going to be in the room when they make decisions. But I don't think he's ultimately going to be real part of it. And then the other big question mark in this situation. Nowhere in this announcement do they ever mention that Miyazaki is involved. And to me, that's the bigger sus in this situation. Why? Well, you're going to throw some, you know, again, a very popular YouTuber on who is a very big Bloodborne fan on top of this. But why wouldn't you get the guy who actually wrote the film, or, you know, wrote the games to be on?
Did he license it from me directly?
He's not. Yeah, I don't. Right? It's not. Well, it's. I think it's more of a. It's he is a producer on it. He's not licensing and he's not developing it. You know, I think he's
developing it under what, TriStar or something.
I think what it is, it's part of their PlayStation Studios thing. Their PlayStation Studios initiative.
That's the crux. Sony owns it. They don't need. Yeah. He doesn't need to ask Miyazaki. It's but a shame he's not involved, but he doesn't need.
Yeah. But I think, you know, I think that would be a more of an interesting thing. But you know, obviously, you get a name that everybody sort of recognizes, and it. It gets people's attention, which it did. But go ahead. I'm good.
I don't know. Like, you guys seem to kind of be of the mindset of like, oh, this guy's just, you know, just a fucking influencer. Like, you guys like one of the, you do realize he's one of like the legacy internet names, right? Like, one of like the first couple dozen people to make it big on YouTube fucking ever. And he's been around for like a decade and a half, right? He's like, in the Markiplier crowd, like, I don't know if at this point we can call those guys just influencers because they have a decade and a half of content behind them.
Just to clarify real quick, he says he's not writing or directing. So yeah, he's just going to be a producer of the movie. So.
Here's the thing about producers. In Hollywood, it's a real big issue. There's a lot of times you'll see films that have thousands, a bunch of producers on it who have absolutely no power over a film. Half the time they get these roles because they know somebody who knows somebody who decided to put their name on there, but they weren't on set. They didn't choose all the studio that's doing it. What I think it's just a situation that's like he's well known in the influencer space. Even just the fact of him putting him supporting something already gets people to get people to jump on board. I think it's partially that. I think he'll probably say, hey, you know, I don't think the hunters should do that, and he'll be like, maybe. But I don't think he has any sort of other than that, other than, you know, I think this is a project that's already been in motion and they just slapped his name on there like, hey, you want to be a part of this? To sort of give this sort of validity.
What about his other two movies? I'm seeing here 15 Months and Chase from 2019 and 2021.
Those movies didn't do amazingly, but he did make them. The big one is his involvement with Iron Lung and Markiplier's. I think
He was in Free. He did a cameo in Free Guy too. Like I'm like to that I'm like
he does have a lot of credits, but it's because it's him. He's an attractor. So.
Yeah, I think he's following. I honestly think Markiplier, because Iron Lung was critically received really well. So like I think. That opened the door to a bunch of Hollywood being like, well, who else is in YouTube doing stuff?
That's exactly what I think.
So, but in fairness, Markiplier did do a good job on that from what I understand.
No, I mean, he's been sort of working his way into making a film, you know, like he's had, you know, and again, he's also been trying to break out of that sort of influencer space in general and work his way into film. Obviously, because of his, you know, because of his fan base, he's able to, he could make possibly anything and still have them go see it.
Didn't Critical Drinker just make a feature film too or something like that? Like I seem to remember hearing he was breaking into actual content creation too. So
to be fair with Critical Drinker, he was a writer and filmmaker way before even the YouTube stuff, you know?
Oh, was he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how
I didn't know he was a filmmaker. I knew he was a writer. That's interesting.
Yeah, he was first a writer. And he has a shit ton of novels. Then he started doing films, and then he just started doing the YouTube shit just for fun, and then that just broke big, you know. But Brett, I want to go to your point about the influencer stuff. And again, maybe this is something we just have to get used to, because, like, for example, I love the Happy Console Gamer. He's been old school YouTube guy, right? If I hear he's going to be producing a Dragon Quest animated thing, and he loves Dragon Quest, I'll be like, him? Really? You know, it's a weird thing to have like an influencer, and I'm talking about one that I know, you know, doing one of these type of movies. But maybe that's the world we live in. Maybe Hollywood is so fucking cooked right now that we have to go to these influencers, you know, to get something that might be good. You know, who knows? Maybe that's just the new reality.
Would it change your mind if instead of influencer, you just thought of him as famous person?
Yeah, but it's just like famous for what? Oh, for being on YouTube. You know what I mean? I mean, granted, that's better than famous for, you know, being a whore like Kim Kardashian or Paris Hilton. I guess that's better than that, you know, or famous for being famous, you know?
Famous, YouTube is kind of a weird famous for being on TV. I think we're just old enough that it doesn't make sense to us. But for a lot of people, like if you've got 12 million YouTube views, that's way more than like fucking Mickey Mouse Club or whatever the fuck got. So
no, you're right.
Technically they're bigger name. For me, the thing that makes sense is when you attach an influencer as like a producer or something like that, if this person is a huge vocal advocate of the IP, then basically you're bringing them on as, you know, a fan consultant, which I think honestly should happen more all the time. Looking at you, LucasArts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens with this. But again, just to show just how I literally have never heard of this guy. You know, I barely know who the fuck Markiplier is, you know, so this is just not a space I'm in. But listen, if this guy delivers, you know, a good Blubber movie, even if he's just sitting in the room, you know, okay, cool.
or if it fails, as crashes and burns as badly as those Silent Hill films or that probably that Metal Gear Solid film is going to probably do, you have somebody to blame. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Sony is doing a lot right now. They're doing the Zelda movie. So we'll see how it all goes.
Yeah. All right, man. Good stuff there. It's been about interesting things. Actually, this one's cool. Crimson Desert keeps winning. 5 million sales, bro. Fucking insane. And how long's this game been out? Like a month, you know? March 19th. And yeah, less than a month, and it's already full 5 million. You know, it's one of these games that's interesting. It's like, you know, it wasn't well received by the media, but the fans love it, you know, because there's a lot of... I said that. What happened? Wait, did you say you were scared?
I'm scared.
Why is that?
Because this game has the same kind of review structures that I'm pretty sure Crystal Meth does, where there's like a few people being like, this is terrible, a few people being like, this ruined my life, and a bunch of people like frantically scratching me like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I want to get involved in this or not. This is kind
I see what you mean.
The funny thing, Brett.
One Piece.
Yeah, you're scared for yourself.
Similar. Similar to One Piece, like a lot of people, you know, when they try to get other folks to get into it, it's like, bro, after the first 30 episodes or after the first 50 episodes or after the first 100 episodes, the same thing with Crimson Desert. Like, no, bro, after the first 50 hours, yo, trust me, that's this game.
I also think that game is also the bet, like a really good, I guess, memified/, internet game, where in other words, somebody's always finding something new in that game and they're showing it off, and it's totally advertising itself. Like one guy literally found a cowboy hat and literally made a Red Dead Redemption build for their character. It's in there. You know, like they found, okay, you can have a squad of, you know, somebody figured, okay, you could pick up cats. Well, if you become, you know, if your affinity goes up with those animals, they start to follow you around. And then there's cats that have armor, and you can have like a gang of cats. It's like all kinds of crazy things, the little tiny systems that they sort of put in there. Just sort of let people find them, you know?
That's great.
Yeah, to that point, you know how like there's a lol cow where it's like this person just generates like lols? Is this a meme cow? It just generates memes? It's like, because you see this fucking game everywhere, bro. And like I said, I like the fact that people are actually enjoying the game, you know, instead of complaining about it, you know, which is always a good thing. But yeah.
It only does everything.
Yeah, it's funny, yeah, because it is the Applebee's of gaming. Everything is in this thing, you know? But like I said in my review, you're getting your money's worth with this motherfucker. You absolutely are, you know? So shout out to the team. You know, shout out to South Korea, too, while I'm at it. Some good stuff there.
Yep, I'll again, just Brian. Add to Manny's point, and I think Brett would enjoy this. So, Brett, in this game, you can find a pirate hat. I'm not going to tell you where, because obviously that ruins the fun. And the pirate hat glows whenever there's treasure nearby.
Oh, God damn it.
Mm-hmm. I know. And just add to Manny's thing with the cats, I can confirm that you can get cats, and there's like a, you can get like a bunch of different types of cats. Cats and dogs, by the way. You can have up to like 30 of them at a time. And I just found out this right now. When you swim, they also swim as well. So they actually have a cat swimming animation.
There's also a rooster hat someone found that crows whenever the sun rises.
And somehow there's robots and dragons somewhere. I haven't found them yet, but I heard that they're there. And a train somewhere.
Yes, there is a train. It's crazy,
is
man.
Peter Green?
Yes. Yes, it is. All right. All right, good stuff there. Speaking about Fever Dreams, oh, that was a perfect segue. So the trailer for the Street Fighter movie came out today. My first reaction was, why doesn't this suck? It actually looks fun. Like, what is happening here? You know, like, you could kind of tell the director loves Street Fighter. They're actually doing their moves. They're doing their super moves. They're doing their combo. Like, they're doing all this shit. They even threw, like, the special effects in there everywhere. Obviously, you know, the movie could still be awful, but just based off the trailer, I'm like, okay, I think they kind of get the point. Because this Street Fighter, you know, like when you're playing the game, it might be somewhat serious, but not really. It's like, it's not going to be, this is not fucking War and Peace. This is a fucking Street Fighter movie. But yeah, like I'm surprised because when I saw that initial reveal, I'm like, this looks like fucking trash. And I see this, I'm like, oh, this doesn't look horrible. I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying it doesn't look horrible. I'm intrigued. You know? Did you guys see this thing? And if so, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw it. And like I was talking to Tony about it earlier. It doesn't look bad. So, you know, like you mentioned also, I mean, doesn't mean it's not going to be bad, but you know, they did a good job in the trailer to showcase sort of, you know, we're sticking to the roots of the game. You know, we're not doing the Mortal Kombat thing. You know, we're kind of, you know, showcasing more of what the game is. And actually it looks, maybe it's just a more recent Street Fighter thing, but it, you know, Street Fighter 4, the aesthetic of Street Fighter 4, like that's what, you know, this movie looks like, at least to me.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but you're right. It does look like more like it. Even the colors like look like Street Fighter 6.
Yes.
Like, yeah, you could tell they're doing that. Very interesting. Like, Chun-Li seems to be the recruiter of the Street Fighters in this. She goes around the world grabbing them and stuff, and they're all in there. Oh, I have a question, though. Is Sagat in this fucking movie? I didn't see him there, you know?
No, I don't know.
But everyone else is in there. I think we saw like a quick shot of Jason Momoa as Blanca, which is still insane to me, you know.
50, man, that's the one I can't get over with.
I'm sorry, he looks good as Balrog, man. He really does. Like, oh shit, you know. I wonder if he's gonna get shot 9 times.
Oh, he's gonna
get shot 9 times in this fucking movie.
Again, I would not be mad if Sagat goes to the ring, right? And his walk up music is "Many men wish death upon me."
That'd be amazing.
How much do one bet that there'll be a Balrog joke about Floyd Merriweather?
Oh, shoot.
Oh.
Because, again, it's 50, so you know that he can do it, and he can probably afford to do it as well. So,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wonder, did they show, what's his name, the comedian? I don't remember seeing him in this trailer.
Yeah, he is. He's like he seems to be. He's playing Dan, by the way, which is crazy. He is like Ken's like ring promoter or something. That's what it seems like. Like he's like Ken's promotion guy. Like if you look back at the trailer where Ken gets into the ring, you see Dan there, Andrew Schultz, which is still insane to be like, what are you doing in this movie? Go back to your podcast, bro. But yeah, Rich, I want to get your thoughts on the Street Fighter trailer and let me know why it's your most anticipated movie of the year.
He's already pre-ordered it.
Oh, there he is.
Well, first and foremost, Tony, let's not deflect. We know that you will be at the theaters day one to see this movie. Yes.
I'm not going to deny anything, man.
Yeah, I have to agree 100%. Yeah, the movie looks like it'll be pretty fun. I also like the fact that they had the whole mini game of you destroying the cars. They had the shot of Ken. Yeah, see, that's what I said. So I could tell the director is a huge fan and respects the lore. So I am curious to see that. We saw Roman Reigns towards the end of the trailer as Akuma. Very interesting. And of course, Cody Rhodes as Guile front and center, also on the poster as well. So, yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. Now, I will say this. I believe that Carlos made the comment about Mortal Kombat earlier. I do want to see Mortal Kombat because the actor in there is the same actor that's in The Boys. So I want to see what he brings to the Johnny Cage role just for shits and giggles. But no, listen, the Street Fighter thing didn't look bad, so I'm at least intrigued enough where I would check it out. But I'm not paying no premium $20 to see this, obviously. But yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, when is this dropping again?
I think it's, what is it, October 16th or 17th, somewhere in October. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm surprised. I'm like, this doesn't look like it sucks. So we'll see,
October 16th.
Oh, shit. That's crazy. All right. And the last story, because this one came out and we're like, wait, what? What are we doing now? They're re-releasing the Neo Geo AES, the actual console, the one that used to cost $700 back in the day. This one will be not cost as much, obviously. $250 and $70 games. The games used to cost $250. Because you got to remember, this is a full-on arcade system, and it's going to launch with 10 games, Metal Slug, King of Fighters 2002, Garo, Mark of the Wolves, Big Tournament Golf, Shock Trooper, Samurai Showdown 5, Pulse Star, Twinkle Star Sprites, Magician Lord, and Over the Top. Here's the thing, King of Fighters 2002 is fine, but I just should have won 98. That's like the shit. But it's cool that we're getting Mark of the Wolves there, Everybody on Twitter was going fucking crazy. Justin Wong said, like, he is like, yo, I got to buy this day one. Speaking about Justin Wong, about the Street Fighter movies, like, yo, they better not have a part where Ken is parrying Chun-Li's kicks. Otherwise, I'm leaving the theater. Oh, man. But yeah, this is cool, man. Manny, I want to get your thoughts. What do you think about this Neo Geo re-release?
I mean, it's very surprising, and it actually plays the original cartridges. So that's even nuttier. So if you have an original cartridge, then you can play it on there. They haven't gone into detail as to what this thing does, right? Is it some sort of FPGA or some sort of software emulation that it's got going on there?
Yeah, I don't believe it's emulation. I think it's like, it might be FPGA. There's no other way of doing that. It has to be that if it's not emulation, but I guess this is, Manny, you brought this up too. This is something good that the Saudis are doing.
I mean, that's the one thing about the Saudis is that if they're into something, they'll throw a shitload of money. And then sometimes you'll get Salvador Ganachi and And what is his face? Soccer player guy? I can't remember.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo. You know, but it's like, they're like, it makes perfect sense to us. You know, we love him. Don't you? But yeah.
Salvador Inachi?
Exactly. He's the only guy the voice of God is the only person who knows who that is that we know. But yeah, I think, you know, we'll see what it is. I would like to see a little bit more, have a lot of the, you know, the enthusiasts who know about this sort of stuff really sort of take a deep dive into it, you know, because it does sound like it's too good to be true, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm going to have to go on YouTube and, you know, again, Happy Console Gamer, maybe the immortal John Hancock, all those guys. Our boy, Manny, you know, Metal Jesus.
Metal see what Jesus? He has to say. Well, I mean, he's not so much into that. Like, he knows stuff, but he's not into the whole deeper end, guys. I would probably go with, I can't remember. He's two guys that always do it. That always do the go, like, make these really long videos into, like, how these consoles and stuff go. I think John Linneman had them on a few times, too.
Jeffrey says, may be the only console this year with games hardware cheaper than on release date. Yeah, that's right. Like, this is an affordable console. It really is. You know, even if you buy all the games, you'll still, like, pay less than you would, like, a PlayStation or something. I'm curious to check this thing out, man. Obviously, I never even knew anybody who had a fucking Neo Geo back when I was a kid. That thing was expensive, you know? So
yeah. All the rich kids.
Cool. Oh, yeah, right. But we didn't know them, man. We were poor. We didn't know. They didn't deal with us, with our trash, you know, in the front, you know, living in the projects and shit. But yeah, man, good stuff. I don't know when the release date is for this thing. I don't know. I don't see it here, but I'm down with it. Shout out to one of my favorite YouTube channels, Neo Geo Now. You know my man was talking about this, you know, because he usually does, like, you know, Neo Geo fighting game stuff, but with the actual console, he's like, oh shit, this is it. So I definitely want to hear his thoughts as well, you know. And that's it for us, man. We are done here. Another show in the books. So let's start wrapping it up and plug some stuff. I'll start with plugging something that's half of us here, I'll throw it out, are involved with. The Invincible Podcast, people. You know, episode 7 has just launched. Fucking amazing episode. So I predict an equally incredible podcast. So check us out over on the Coalition Gaming, Coalition Entertainment YouTube channel. That'll be up around Saturday. That's going to be a really good discussion. Looking forward to that. And then one more episode to go after this to wrap up the season, man. Invincible's fucking awesome. Like, if you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's great, you know? And Rich, what else is coming up on the Coalition this weekend?
So, yes, I'll piggyback off of what Tony said. Yes, you need to watch Invincible. That latest episode, fantastic. So stay tuned for our podcast. Shout out to Mr. Adam Vale, the TV Terminal. He is still covering several different shows, and you should check out his YouTube channel, the TV Terminal. As for the Coalition, as I mentioned earlier, I am still playing through Mouse. I'm still playing through Replace, so I will be talking about those a lot more extensively soon, and I will be talking about another game in the future that I cannot talk about now. So stay tuned, though. This is the busy season that we are in, so a lot to talk about in the future.
All right, good stuff. And Manny, what's going on with you?
So, not a lot, but Kari and I do have one cool project that we've been doing for the Boston Celtics. Kari was actually just interviewed by the local Boston station over there. So we have our new cheer card that's going to be being revealed for the playoffs. And hopefully it will be in circulation as long as the Celtics are in the playoffs. So hopefully it'll go all the way, even though I'm not a Boston fan, but it's got our artwork on it. And yeah, so if you go to any of the home games, you'll get I think everybody in the arena gets a cheer card with artwork that was done by us. So it's really cool. They got Kari over the last week and the weekend. He went to one of the games, all that good stuff. And I, you know, big shout out to Kari in general. This project, it was like, it wasn't officially a both of us project. It was him just, and then hiring me as a subcontractor, but he, you know, pushed to have me, you know, included in any of the announcements. So anytime you see the announcements for them, you see Kari Randolph and Emilio Lopez, which is really great. So, yeah. So if you're a Boston or a Boston fan or any of that sort of stuff, and you're going to the games, you get some cool artwork.
All right. Good stuff. And that's going to do it for us, man. So let's wrap it up. So shout out to everybody in the chat right now. Coel is holding it down, you know. But yeah, you can follow through on Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube. Join the Discord. Shout out to the Discord crew. You guys were having a lot of fun with the Street Fighter stuff today. So that's always fun. And we're also on your favorite podcast app. Links to everything down below. Once again, our show is Tony Polanco. And tonight, I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
And Brian Mungioma.
Later, people.
All right, guys, we shall return on Sunday. Later.
Laters.